Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Anyway, time for Tell Me Why with Graham Finlay. If you have a question for Graham, you can send it as ever into afternoon@newstalk.com. Today's question is, why do we give gifts?
Yeah.
That's it. And so we're going to look at this, I suppose, from an economic point of view, from an anthropological point of view, because people listening to that question might say, well, it's obvious why we give gifts.
Although it's not at all obvious. I mean, think about it. Giving gifts to people is kind of irrational. First of all, you know, they probably know what they want more than you do, mm-hmm. right? So why not just give them money? But even giving money just doesn't seem right, right? You know, because why, how can they benefit you, you know, these other people you're giving money to? And that's, but also we have a, and it's an interesting question, and we're going to get into in the anthropological part, about why money, giving money, except under particular circumstances, is frowned upon in a lot of cultures.
Yeah.
So instead we give gift cards, so, which is like money, only not as good.
Yeah. Right?
So, and but there are lots of, but one of the things we you find out when you think about giving gifts is that it really is fundamental to our society. And basically, I could try and give you the entire history of the discipline of anthropology on this mm-hmm. score, but I won't. You'll be glad to hear. But let's start with the economics, because again, gifts are a form of exchange, right?
Mm.
But they're very different from straight-up economics.
Are they a
swapping.
Form of exchange in the sense that you give something and you expect something back?
Not always. And this is one of the debates which goes on in that, you know, people give a gift, say, to children, and they're not necessarily expecting anything back except for maybe good behavior. And that's an interesting question. So there are lots and lots of different questions.
That.
But
yeah.
I mean, gifts can perform so many different functions. But they are, at least in the anthropological literature, very much seen as exchange. Whereas you can imagine people in the economic literature giving without really expecting to receive. And that's because of the phenomenon of altruism. Now, this was identified by a guy named Gary Becker, who is a very, very famous economist, which is an altruist in economic terms is someone who doesn't distinguish between their beneficiaries' consumption and their own.
Right? Okay.
So and also is in a position to benefit the beneficiary in some way. Now, usually this means they have more spending power or more resources than the beneficiary.
Okay.
And so if you don't distinguish between the beneficiary's consumption and your own, then you will transfer to the beneficiary because it's probably a lot more efficient for the beneficiary to consume, right? If it's a child, you know, the child is going to get so much more enjoyment out of the €5 you give to your child in terms of a gift or something else than you are, right? Because of diminishing marginal utility. €5 to me, not a big deal. To my kid, quite a big deal.
Huge
right?
deal.
So,
yeah.
So if your preferences are informed by the efficiency of somebody else's consumption, you're going to transfer to them. But, and this is the exciting part, the beneficiary could hate your guts, but it's in their interest, or just be totally indifferent to you. But it's really in their interest not to harm the altruist, or the altruist's interests are very much in their interest, because this is how economics works. If the altruist's actual ability to consume, if their resources go down, then their transfers are going to go down to their beneficiaries.
Yeah.
And so this explains giving in lots and lots of different ways, right? You know, it can explain why, you know, you're giving to your kids, for example. Suppose you have a kid, this is the famous rotten kid theorem.
Right.
You have a kid who just would love to torment his brother or sister, but, you know, would value the stuff you might transfer to him more. Mm. So he torments his brother, kicks her, hits her, whatever, and enjoys it quite a bit. And the beneficiary sees the happiness on the rotten kid's face.
Yeah.
Right. And the unhappiness on the sister's. And since the altruist, presumably a parent, cares about both of their well-being, they're going to transfer more resources to the sister or the brother who's been hurt than to the kid who's been doing the hurting. And accordingly, it's not rational at a lot of different points, unless they really, really want to hurt their siblings, right, for the rotten kid to do it. Because the transfers will be reduced as a result.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So for all these dynamics...
economics always assumes everyone's rational, which is this fundamental flaw in economics.
That's when we're going to get to the anthropology and the psychology. Yeah. No, I mean, but I mean, it does mean that this can be quite a powerful sort of function if the conditions and the pricing are right, basically. Mm. And, you know, Gary Becker sort of suggested that this might adhere in communities as well, because in communities with altruists, right, have more cooperative relations, right? And again, all of this, you can be the worst beneficiary in the world, right? You can be completely indifferent to the altruist's well-being. But if it, it makes it worthwhile for you, for the relationship to be set up, it makes worthwhile for you, the beneficiary, to cooperate with the altruist rather than take their stuff, right? And so these more cooperative communities are actually going to do better.
Yes.
Than non-cooperative communities. So the okay. idea is that this economic basis has could be part of an evolutionary development as well of altruism in cooperative behavior in communities.
Right. So if we look at it then from an anthropological point of view.
It's a lot more complicated.
It's a lot more complicated.
Because, of
okay.
course, like the pricing may not be right. And yet we have a profound commitment to giving in almost all of our societies. And it's always, I mean, so anthropologists, you know, identify gifts as non-market exchange. Right. So, you know, exchanges which are not simply buying something for something else or bartering for something else. And really at the beginning of anthropology, all these marvelous books by Bronislaw Malinowski called Argonauts of the Western Pacific and Marcel Mauss's the Gift. I mean, it's a classic at the very beginnings of anthropology. This debate kicks off about what is giving. Because Malinowski, who was a Polish anthropologist, went to the Trobriand Islands, which are in the southwestern Pacific, and noticed that these people would travel huge distances in very dangerous open ocean to give what looked like a useless piece of stuff to other tribes with great ceremony, which would include a sort of deprecation of the worth of the piece of stuff they're giving, like a piece of metal or like some shells or something like that. And this whole gift exchange was the basis of sort of their politics and hierarchy. So it would go around through these different islands, and it would always be seen as belonging to the to someone who was sort of the original owner who had started this gift relationship going. And you know, clearly it was, and they had a whole another system of goods for bartering and trading with each other. So this was clearly not performing that function. And Malinowski suggested that this was a way of reinforcing hierarchies. It was sort of a declaration of power. And it was a way of setting up a hierarchical relationship between people.
Right. Okay.
Now, Mauss...
And in terms of hierarchy, who was higher up, the giver or the receiver?
So, you know, different ones of these various societies had different... Oh, the giver always would be higher up, right?
Okay.
In fact, the giver, one of the things is the giver is always, almost always higher up. Right. And we might come to that in a second.
Yeah.
there would be sort of these hereditary hierarchical positions, which would be the true owners of these objects, even though it might take them a while to come around and stuff like that. Now, I mean, actually, one interesting thing about this is, you know, Marshall Solins, another famous anthropologist, described this as, you know, one form of this, that the gift is a generalized reciprocity. Right. So this is the idea that you give things around, and Mauss came up with all these names for how we describe this activity, like reciprocity. But, you know, the idea is you're giving around and it's sort of all going to work out in the end. And I always think about buying rounds, which is like the one cultural norm which must not be transgressed in this country.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I take it the idea is that, like, even though you're buying around now, you know, eventually over the course of a long life of buying rounds, you'll eventually probably come out about even.
Yeah.
Maybe you're not
that night, probably. Yeah, most
not that night.
Thinking,
hopefully, yeah. Well, yeah, actually, often that night, which is, leads to a problem. But anyway, depending on how many people you're out with.
Yeah.
You know, Mauss thought there was a lot more going on here. And he thought it was about a relationship of constant rebalancing. And giving a gift creates a personal tie. And of course, to refuse a gift is a very, very great insult. And again, if you're talking about different tribes and one tries to give to another one, you know, it's almost, as he describes it, a declaration of war, right? It's a refusal of friendship. So, I mean, and again, refusing a gift would be a pretty serious faux pas in our society, I'd like to think, as well. So, and so one of the problems with the gift is that it's, you know, it starts off this relationship and it's the basis of a relationship. And it's important that it not be immediately returned. Again, if I gave you a gift and then you immediately said, oh, right, yeah, and here's one exactly like it.
Yeah.
I've just been hiding behind my back because I knew you were going to come in with that bottle of whiskey or something like that. And you give me an exactly similar bottle of whiskey. It would sort of demean the relationship and it wouldn't increase, it wouldn't lead to the further development of the relationship. It would be weird, right? Now, there's lots of mutual gift giving, but over the course of a year, usually there's a delayed aspect of the gift. So the gift relationship, while it, you know, it has a sort of mental calculation of what everything's worth, maybe, right? Such that a really large gift completely overbalance the relationship and sort of destroy it.
Or
non-reciprocation of the gift can destroy it. The gift relationship has to be constantly out of balance so as to keep the relationship going. And then the other thing is, you know, one of the funny things about gifts, which again are supposed to be without expectation of reward, at least immediately, right? It means that the first giver, right, is the one who can only give freely. Everybody else is in their debt, right, and is under an obligation to somehow, not re-gift, but to repay the gift. So most really focused on that particular function of the gift as a way of building social ties rather than a way of sort of asserting power. And all these guys looked at all sorts of really cool ceremonies. I mean, one of many people's favorites is the potlatch, which is in Western Canada, Northwestern Pacific United States, where various tribes like the Haida and the Kwakiutl will have a ceremony where the chief will give very, very valuable gifts to all and sundry, and especially his guest who's a rival chief who's come over. But then he'll just destroy a lot of valuable stuff as well. And the way that this relationship works is that's an expression of his wealth and power. And the host, if he's not going to lose face, has to destroy or give away even more when it's his turn to host the potlatch. And you can see how there's a bit of an escalation here. And I think we might have seen it in sort of the holidays as well sometimes. Anyway, there's lots and lots of other ways in which gifts can be used. And again, psychologically, really, it's really fascinating. So you can use gifts to express your identity. You know, I'm giving this because I'm this kind of guy.
Yeah.
Right? I'm giving out cigars.
You give someone, you can give somebody a present to say, I think you're this kind of person.
Exactly. It's a way of expressing how you view the identity of the person again. And so this gets around this question about whether we really know what people want, right? Mm. Of course, we might be paternalistic about our children. We say, well, they may want a block of sweets the size of a Volvo.
Here's a membership for a gym or yoga lessons. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Those go down really well, let me tell you. It's an expression of how you think about the other person. Again, it's a way of putting, you know, we want to put some positive spin on giving because it's so fundamental. Mm. It's a way of showing that you've put the time in and thought into thinking about what someone would really want. Although if you're like me, you probably have gotten it spectacularly wrong. But there's that. There's another way of doing it is you can set boundaries and identify people with a group. And this is from a 1969 article by a guy called Barry Schwartz on the social psychology of the gift. And the example he uses is an anthropological description of Irish children from 1940.
Right.
Which is that, and it talks about how, an Irish child will go and run errands and receive small gifts from their aunties and uncles and cousins and so forth.
Right,
sweets,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or maybe their neighbors as well. My neighbors are always giving my kids sweets, right? Which is lovely of them. And then, like at First Communion, they notice the sort of potlatch quality, although they don't burn any stuff, right? Of the First Communion and the Confirmation, but especially the First Communion or weddings, where the Irish child gets a lot of stuff
Ka-ching.
Compared to very, very poor 1940s Ireland, right? And that, you know, builds the sort of kinship group and the child's identity with his or her family and extended family and maybe neighbors and community as sort of held within the boundaries of that particular community. But there's lots and lots of other ways in which people...
Isn't that interesting? Because I suppose even now, to a degree, that tradition remains for communion and confirmation. Afterwards, kids are, you know, often asked, much did you make? And we all decry the fact it's become terribly commercial. But I suppose the more you make, the more that says something about how big your family group, your community group is, and perhaps how they regard you.
Yeah, I mean, and this is culturally specific. Like when you make your first communion in Canada, you get a Bible. So you don't get like an envelope full of money, right?
In Ireland, we don't really like the whole religious aspect to confirmation.
But what's really interesting are these ceremonies, and I've been at various ones. So if my friend had a Sikh wedding, and part of the ceremony, which was awesome, it was one of the best weddings I've ever been to, is placing money in the lap of the bride and groom, like actual bills and stuff like that. And so it's interesting that for some of these big events, giving money is okay, maybe because you know that people are reaching a certain stage in life when money rather than Bibles might be a little more useful, or money rather than toys or sweets or something like that might be a little bit more useful. But generally, the gift relationship is almost always defined by its separateness from economic exchange. Right? And indeed, the bonds which are created are reduced insofar as the exchange seems more and more transactional.
Graham, always fascinating, and happy Christmas to you. Hope you get some lovely presents, not just transactional ones on Christmas Day. Graham Finley there. We're going to take a break after that. The Dodo's Cousin.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.